This episode of TopCast is brought to you by UCF Online. 20-plus years of award-winning online excellence, 75-plus online programs, one of the largest and most innovative universities in the U.S., ucf.edu/online.
From the University of Central Florida's Center for Distributed Learning, I am Tom Cavanaugh.
And I am Kelvin Thompson.
And you are listening to TopCast, the teaching online podcast. Here we are again, Kelvin.
Here we are again, Tom.
One of my favorite podcasting places.
The closet.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We've done it in some strange places.
The strangest place it was
New Orleans,
the French Quarter.
Yeah,
those people coming up and staring in our face while
we're trying to talk. And the ironic thing is that we didn't even get to use it. I know, because of my inability to work my iPhone.
It's all right. Registered TopCast insiders got the actual raw recording of
the Kelvin half of the conversation.
That's right, something like that. It was, you know, it's like that.
Cool. Well. Mm-hmm. With no further ado, I say we jump right into the thermos.
That's going to be a tight fit, Tom. It's going to be a tight fit if we both try to climb in there. Well, I should let you know, Tom, that today's episode of TopCast is groundbreaking.
Well, do tell.
Yes, because we have not one, as normally regular listeners will know, not one coffee, but two featured coffees in this episode.
Dos cafes.
Wow. I know you're concerned about your caffeine saturation, though, so I'm only giving you like a half a cup or a quarter cup of each one.
All right. Thank you. I was wondering why there are two mugs situated in front of me. Now
right.
I know.
That's right. So these two coffees are connected by a story, Tom.
Okay.
The first coffee comes to us from the lobby of the Johnny Cash Museum in Nashville, Tennessee. Hello, I'm Johnny Cash. So during the 2018 OLC Innovate Conference, I had occasion to pop into the museum and found in the museum cafe, you won't believe this, an extremely tasty cup of coffee roasted specially for the cafe by a local Nashville coffee roaster called Bongo Java Roasters.
Okay.
And they call this specialty blend, get this, you ready?
Ready.
Hold on. A brew named Sue.
Of course they do.
So as if you don't know, that's an homage to a famous Johnny Cash song, which I can testify pairs just fine with the coffee. I have sipped the coffee and played the song. And
at the same time?
At the same time,
All right.
I like the coffee so much that I bought some to bring home and share with you.
Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. That's a whole different guy.
Yeah.
Once I got back home, I discovered that our UCF colleague, Dr. Beth Nettles, had picked up some coffee for us from directly across the street from the Johnny Cash Museum at the Goo Goo Cluster Shop and Cafe.
Okay.
They call this one Goo Goo Brew.
A brew named Sue and Goo Goo Brew.
That's right. I can't confirm much about the provenance of the Goo Goo Brew other than to say that on the Goo Goo Cluster Shop website, they were told that this is a Kona blend, quote, specially blended to pair with Goo Goo Clusters, unquote. I don't know how they did that, but it's a good story, and I have tested it. I ate a Goo Goo Cluster with the coffee and
listen to some Johnny Cash.
Yeah, exactly. And it all tasted fine to me, but, you know, what's not going to taste good with a Goo Goo Cluster?
I was just about to say that.
In fact, I brought a Goo Goo Cluster if you want to nibble on that we're doing that. So,
you know how I feel about chewing into a microphone.
I know you does not like it. Well, you can have some afterwards. So given that today's episode is going to feature two, count them, two guests.
Yeah.
And that we're going to be talking about storytelling, I thought bringing both of these two coffees in connected by a story made sense.
Awesome. All right, well, let me take a sip of the first one, which
so
I believe
that one
is a brew named Sue.
I think that one is this one, so that's Goo Goo Brew.
All right, Goo Goo Brew.
And the one on the other side is the brew named Sue.
All right, the Goo Goo Brew will do.
The Goo Goo Brew will do.
And a brew named Sue will too.
Oh, that's good. And I've got my Dr. Seuss mug here I'm drinking out of today. You see that?
Could you, would you, in a podcast booth?
That's right. Today you were you. That is truer than true. There was no one alive who was youer than you. Thank you, Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss.
That's right.
He's full of wisdom.
That's something. Full of coffee.
So, they're excellent. Thank you.
Yep.
And thank Dr. Beth Nettles.
Yes, indeed.
I get it. So, we've got two coffees, and we actually have two guests on the show today.
That's exactly right.
So back during the OLC Accelerate 17 conference, where you and Beth picked up these coffees, you interviewed Angela Gunder and Jessica Knott on the broad topic of storytelling. Angela is Director of Instructional Design and Curriculum Development for the Office of Digital Learning at the University of Arizona. And Jessica is Learning Design Manager and Applied Researcher for Michigan State University's IT Teaching and Learning Technology. Both Jessica and Angela are impressive professionals.
I can testify thusly.
And they have amazing energy.
Mm-hmm.
You should read their bios, definitely in the show notes.
Yep.
But Angela and Jessica are also passionate about storytelling.
They're passionate about many things, but yes, storytelling is one of them.
And awesome volunteers for the Online Learning Consortium.
Absolutely.
They've studied storytelling, mm-hmm. and they have been engaged with innovating conference planning to incorporate storytelling efforts.
Yep.
And we'll put some links mm-hmm. to some of that in the show notes.
We sure will.
And they are also frequent collaborators and have teamed up on many projects, and as I said, including co-chairing the OLC Innovate 2018 conference.
Yes. And so they just did the 2018 Innovate conference, but we actually recorded this back during the 2017 Accelerate conference. But
that's right. That's yes. Right. So shows you how involved they are.
They are. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
That's cool. Well, you had a great discussion with mm-hmm, them mm-hmm. about storytelling.
Yep.
And we're going to go ahead and cut to that now. We come back and maybe make a few comments.
Yeah. So we were talking about before we hit record that storytelling is a thing. Storytelling's mm-hmm. Not a new thing. Ironically, as we segue, but there is a lot that we can do with storytelling. So can I just ask maybe broadly, just for get everybody on the same page as our listeners, kind of why is storytelling a good thing? And then maybe we can talk about kind of maybe new forms of storytelling and how that plays out in our field a little bit.
So I love and I've used this quote earlier. We're actually at OLC Accelerate right now.
Yes.
And I used this quote earlier at our women's leadership luncheon, but Ira Glass said that storytelling is the machine, and I really like the engine of empathy. And when you take the idea of narrative and you think that it's beyond just the way that we get people to come to consensus, to launch onto new journeys of novel ideas, it's actually how we're wired, that mm-hmm. we're driven by stories and that it's in our DNA. Mm-hmm. So if we think about how we can use storytelling in all of our work, wouldn't we want to use the tools that are actually linked to how we're wired as human beings?
Absolutely. It also provides a really important kind of safe space for dissensus as well. So it's easier to disagree with someone in a story than it is to disagree with them, you know, in a typical conversation. Well, that's your story.
Yeah.
How does mine compare?
I think about, and I'm going to date myself horribly, although I will say that as I make this reference that I watched everything in reruns, not in real time. But historically, being a big geek, Star Trek, the original series, I think very much that way, right? Gene Roddenberry, no matter love him or hate him or whatever, a lot of hot topic, sensitive political issues played out on stage in Star Trek, disguised as science fiction.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, there is a great author, Christopher Vogler, who in the 90s took the idea of the monomyth, which was mm-hmm. created by mythologist Joseph Campbell mm-hmm. back in the 40s, and mm-hmm. said all of our most compelling stories that we tell and that we're drawn to are all based on this hero's journey.
Yeah.
So when you look back at Star Trek episodes, and actually Star Wars specifically was one of the major works that Christopher Vogler referenced.
Yeah.
He says, hey, we're all heroes in the waiting. We're mm-hmm. here in the ordinary world, mm-hmm. and some sort of call to action, some sort of cataclysmic event compels us to leave, to go about and do something that will hopefully bring some good back to the ordinary world from where we came.
And that is probably the most famous thing, that hero's journey thing. But I've read somewhere a quote from John Lasseter of Pixar Disney fame, who had sort of an alternative monomyth kind of a thing too, that he found useful. And it's like a stranger came to town and everything changed.
Yep.
That's a good one.
And think about that in the context of education.
Yeah. What does that mean when somebody comes in and everything is disrupted?
Yeah.
And that's a neutral statement. Mm-hmm. That's not a mm-hmm. positive or
that's
a negative.
Right. That's right.
And I think that that's one of the things that we're called to do as educators, is to take all of these things as neutral elements. And hopefully, if it looks pretty challenging, that we're reimagining it as an opportunity, because we need to be modeling that experience for our students. They're going to go out into this world where there's all sorts of ambiguity, and they're going to have to make sense of it, mm-hmm. and then hopefully be propelled into action.
So let's talk about that a little bit. So how does that play out specifically in our educational settings? Maybe even at the individual course level, how does storytelling play out? And at all, but also maybe storytelling with new forms of media maybe as well.
Why don't you start with the broad, and then I'll talk about the,
yeah.
the development frameworks.
So when you think about our traditional role in the classroom as educators, we want to make these compelling arguments for our students. And we can lead with data, or we can contextualize things that will connect them to the real world. Mm-hmm. And it's not an or, it's actually an and. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways that storytelling can be the most powerful tool in our arsenal is that we can look at the data, but actually connect it to things that will compel students to action, so that those consumers of those stories that will mm-hmm. lead them to where we want them to go with mm-hmm. our learning outcomes that we've designated. So certainly reframing a lot of the ways that we deliver a didactic in a classroom. How can we make it compelling? How can we move students to consider new ideas, new structures, new methods that they had not maybe envisioned before? Narrative can be that mm-hmm. way for you to do that.
But and it can also help them find their way.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So everyone experiences, if I put five people out of the hallway into the same online course or conference presentation, they would experience it differently. Mm-hmm. And through that narrative, we can help students follow a pathway that both works for them and is what we have designed for them to experience. Mm-hmm.
So I think that piece is key that you're talking about. One, there's this misconception that maybe we're all sort of close to being in the same boat. We don't necessarily think that there could be people sitting next to us that have very different ideas. And then beyond that, too, we could also feel like we're on the other side of it, that we're the outlier, that everybody else feels one way and we don't. And we maybe self-select out from speaking about our individual story. So one of the most compelling things that we can do is to set students up to be the creators of stories as opposed to just the consumers of stories, because there's a lot of transformative action that can occur mm-hmm. when you give people the mic, the spotlight, even folks like Jess and I, who you will probably laugh when we say that we're introverted.
Yeah. You're making fun of us a little bit, but we are. So we are the people who are like, hey, we're going to do this thing. And then everybody gets excited. We're like, now we're going to go hide in that corner.
And see how it unfolds.
And see how it goes. Because yeah. to find those stories and elevate them is really mm-hmm. the power behind them.
Mm-hmm. So nuts and bolts of all of this, mm-hmm. I think that there are a lot of great, like, low-tech, no-tech tools and frameworks mm-hmm. that you can use, but one that's kind of a blend of both for me has mm-hmm. been Adobe Spark. Lately, that's been just melting my butter mm-hmm. in terms of...
Is that good or bad? I'm not...
Good.
Okay, that's
just
good.
Just imagine
okay.
a fluffy stack of pancakes, maple syrup, a little pat of butter on okay. there, just melting into all goodness.
Right. Okay. That actually made my mouth water. Talk about narrative. Way to story tell that.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
yeah.
I owe you guys pancakes at some point
yes,
after
you do.
This.
I'll take that.
Yeah. But having a tool that not only allows people to create presentational content, so you can have single scrolling parallax mm-hmm. pages, mm-hmm. you can have individual images. Just think of creating a quick meme that mm-hmm. could tell a story with mm-hmm. just an image and a couple of words, mm-hmm. or having an explainer video. Mm-hmm. It allows you to do all of that, and that's fantastic, and it's free, mm-hmm. and you can do it on any device. But what I love about it, and I'm not getting paid by Adobe for saying all of this. They actually took the hero's journey and broke it up into the acts. And for people that are entering into Adobe Spark and don't really know what story they're going to tell,
it scaffolds
and it asks them questions like, who's the hero in this? What was the lesson learned? And they have a couple of different ways that they break that down. And some of the work that Jess and I did related to service and service learning, we actually used a lot of those structures. We used Marshall Gantz, the story of, I'm going to mess this up, me, us, and, well, we're going to correct that in post. Just make me sound brilliant.
We don't know where the edit button is, so we'll just roll with that, but we'll find it and we'll stick it in the show notes. So
yeah. You can't see, but I'm sitting here being completely unhelpful in every way.
But using famous narrative frameworks to get people to start to unpack what they want to tell and not say, oh my gosh, there's all of these great storytellers out there and I'm not one of them. Because I've certainly felt that way. I think I still do quite often.
I do too. My solution is Google Slides. I mean, it's techie, but if you can create a Google Slide with those frameworks in place, it can walk anyone through that. And most people I've found know how to use Google Slides. Or can do so with very little prompting. And if you've done it in an iterative way, eventually you're building your own choose your own adventure. You're building it either collaboratively or individually, and you can branch off and do different things. I will look at Adobe Spark. I have not I've not experienced that yet. But.
Yeah. Twine is another good one, and we have some buddies, John Stewart and Keegan Long Wheeler, who do a lot with branch scenarios within Twine and how you can create these really lightweight games. Because, you know, when you said choose your own adventure, you just think about all of the experiences that you had. Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego is sort of a choose your own adventure of sorts.
The Oregon Trail.
Oregon Trail, yet another. I mean, these things that, like, we look back with so much love and atavistic longing for, they can be woven into any of our learning experiences that we're trying to create. And again, better yet, put into the hands of students so that they can build those things. And Twine is software that lets you do that.
Into the hands of students, into the hands of faculty, into the hands of members of your community, whatever that community is, as a way to catalyze change and forward movement.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're talking a little bit about the intersection of story and story elements, especially choice and branching pathways in story, the intersection of that and technologies. If you had to choose one or the other, when you don't, but if you had to choose story elements or technology, if somebody was just starting out thinking, well, there's something here, I want to play with this a little bit in my teaching or in my design work, would you say, hey, start with the technology and then figure out the story? Or would you say, start with the story and then figure out the technology?
Start with the journey.
There you go.
Then find the story. This is Jess.
Nice,
so,
good.
Most of what I do when I'm starting out is journey mapping. And I do that with markers and string and post-it notes.
So talk about that a little bit.
Find the audience. Find members of the audience. Ask them how they experience the whatever it is, element or experience you're about to design. Talk to them, how would you do this? So if you're thinking of it in the context of an online course, you're never going to get the kind of feedback for how people experience that as you will watching them and asking them their questions. And as you watch, map or sketch or take notes on exactly what they do. So when students come into your course, do you expect them to click on the content tab? If you do, have a few students go in and watch them do it. Do they click on the content tab? How many different experiences do they have? So, and how can you make the experience common and usable for everyone while also kind of leaving them the space to make it their own? So you can call it journey mapping or experience mapping, but that map can drive the story or the narrative, or even, you know, if you want to boil it down just to the design, it can drive all of those.
Now, I know before we hit record that we were talking, I mean, there's like course level stuff, but you guys have been engaged with trying to do some of this work even in like the professional development context as well. You want to maybe kind of zoom out and tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think that the one thing that we're really, really focused on right now is the idea that We're called within our field and our discipline to make data-driven decisions. Mm-hmm. And that can sound complex and daunting for many folks, but a lot of that boils down to talking honestly and frankly and being transparent about the ways that you've had to fail forward. So when you have mm-hmm. A particular instance where you're working and it just didn't work out mm-hmm. as you anticipated, telling that story around what happened and how you might have been able mm-hmm. to convert a challenge into an opportunity, or how you've had to iterate, how you might have had to open up your network and collaborate with new folks that might have pieces that would help to fix whatever started and didn't go as planned.
Well, and how to be, I am not the most adept at being vulnerable. How can you own and feel that vulnerability and feel comfortable asking someone for help?
Yeah.
Help mm-hmm. me find this. This is how I failed. Mm-hmm. It's quote unquote easy to say, go to your network, but how do you find that network?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the strongest things that we can do, and this is a lesson from my mom, she's an accomplished educator in her own right, but she said, Angela, people want authenticity. Just mm-hmm. be real and they'll respond. Uh-huh. And how are we most real other than getting on a mic, telling our story for a little bit, and sharing what's working, what's not? And, you know, we have to break out of this idea that we're within our institutions and we're siloed mm-hmm. and that we're going to have to figure things out ourselves. I mean, some of the best things that I've ever done in my entire career, I was working with people all over the country, everybody participating, mm-hmm. everything's been open and shared. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that it's a big reason why we're here right now talking mm-hmm. to you is mm-hmm. because that's the same mm-hmm. mentality that you're yeah. pushing and trying to get out there.
Right.
How can we explain where we're at and where we want to go?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. In fact, I was co-facilitating a professional development thing during the last year, and it's like a leadership thing. And what became a big theme was people like telling their stories, right, and bringing their whole self to work, and sharing their vulnerabilities and sharing their failures and successes and all. And that became like, despite whatever other curriculum and activities, that became the thing that was, you know, that we came back to again and again and again and again. And as I've run into people, you know, months later, that's what they remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not surprisingly, right? So we remember those evocative stories and the human connection. So I have to say, I really appreciate you unbundling some of this stuff, because for me, and I'm curious if you agree with this, one of the reasons I think the whole storytelling, digital storytelling, whatever words we want to use are so important in our technology-mediated teaching and learning area is they have a humanizing element. And mm-hmm. as we do more and more technology adoption and there's efficiencies and all of that, we need more humanizing elements. And this is humanizing. Would you agree?
I agree. I look, Michelle Pekansky-Brock and humanizing
yeah, right.
education,
yeah.
you know, she isn't always going out and saying, we are storytelling, but I mean, she is using all of these pieces yeah. to bring that to the environment. She's a person I look to frequently. I think mm-hmm. you're right, it's so easy to be. I was a first-generation college student.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know I was a first-generation college
student.
And
me either. Me too, and me either.
The struggles and the you should know better and all of this that just made me feel so small and so like, yeah. where am I going to go? Ha, I'm getting a PhD. Mm-hmm. What is this all about?
Yeah.
The humanizing elements, when I encountered them, are what gave me the confidence and the ability and the strength to kind of continue, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. So I think I segued a little bit.
Yeah,
but
no,
whether or not we call it storytelling, mm-hmm. I think it's really important. What Angela has been bringing up is the sharing of mm-hmm. the story. Who is looking at you right now thinking that person is cool or that person is smart?
Yeah.
What would they do? How would it impact them if you said, dude, I had a 2.2 when I graduated, you know, like
right.
here's where I am now and here's yeah. how I got there. And it yeah. wasn't easy, but let me help you.
Yeah.
yeah. Or right. my advisor failed me and that's why I'm in this, mm-hmm. in this field now. And,
wow.
It was the greatest gift that a human being has ever given me
wow.
in my life.
I had an academic advisor tell me, don't bother to apply for grad school. You're probably not going to amount to much there anyway. So you could just, you know, look for something else to do. And if you know Angela or I, you knew that the first response was, nope, Watch me get this master's, you know.
But, what's the expression, those, hold my beer?
Hold my beer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, you've inspired me with what I'll maybe wrap up this conversation with, which is, you know, we've been talking toward the end of the conversation here about ourselves and professionals and adults, whatever those are, in our field. But wouldn't it be a wonderful gift if students in the courses that we teach and design could have that same experience, right? That, mm-hmm. you know, that human connection, and that, you know, it's okay, you're welcome here, and we all, hey, I don't have this all together either, and you know, you do belong, and mm-hmm. there is potentially a journey. You know, you are on a journey, and you are the hero of that story, and, you know, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen.
Never let anyone tell you you should know better, students. Never. You know, I create the experiences for your students that are the opposite of what made you feel yucky when you were in college, you know?
Hear, hear.
Thanks for joining us today, guys. Can't wait to connect with you again, see all the next parts of your journeys that you're the heroes of. And maybe one day I'll you know, be able to come up to you without getting you behind a mic and feel worthy to be in your presence.
Oh my gosh, Kelvin. Have you been listening?
That's right. I'm remedial most days. Thanks for joining us, and we'll look forward to connecting at another conference soon.
Thank you.
So, Kelvin, that was your interview with Jessica Knott and Angela Gunder.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, Jessica and Angela were the, as we said, the conference co-chairs of the 2018 OLC Accelerate Conference.
Yep.
And Campfire Stories, I am told, was a conference theme.
It was pretty cool, right? I mean, the Campfire Stories, and they had these rangers that were kind of like these guides that would help enhance your experience. There were all these storytelling elements. And I think, I don't know for sure, but I think a lot of that, if not all of it, was due to their influence, which is kind of cool, right? Everybody's always talking about innovating professional conferences, and they're actually out there doing it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of narrative.
Mm-hmm. I imagine.
some people may know I've dabbled in fiction writing. I've written a few novels and used to write for children's television. But I like to invoke narrative when I do presentations and things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Especially as and I didn't make this up, but as a way to introduce a topic and to kind of humanize and personalize whatever you're talking about.
Yep.
Statistics are interesting, I guess, depending on what you're talking about. But telling one individual's story who is a part of those statistics can be very powerful.
I agree.
And we try to do that here as well. And I got that from what they were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, how important it is to humanize the educational experience, especially online.
Yeah. I keep picturing, even listening back to that again, kind of a, of course, you know, you know this, I see the world in concentric circles, it seems like. But it does feel like this concentric circle arranged kind of a thing. You know, whether you're talking about it at an individual course level, or whether you think about a person's professional path or their own journey, you know, personal development thing, or even like a big professional development conference thing, storytelling can play a role in all of that, which is kind of cool.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Really.
And it wasn't just... we were talking about this earlier. It wasn't just storytelling in the context of a single assignment.
Yeah, right.
But in a much broader sort of construct of an entire course being a journey and a story.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting way of looking at your course, that it's a story that we're all kind of characters in.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Jessica and Angela are both, as they mentioned in the interview, deep into monomyth kind of stuff. And I've interacted with Angela outside of the interview before about this, and you know, it's interesting to think about what role do you play as the instructor. You know, are you gonna pitch yourself as the hero of the story? Well, that would be an interesting choice, but might not be the, you know, hopefully you want the student to be the hero of the story. So what's your role? Are you the wise elder? Are you the trickster?
That's you know, that's an interesting question. I taught a class one time,
and you were the trickster.
No, it was called digital storytelling, and it was one of my favorite classes I've ever taught, and it's basically, it was in the digital media program at another institution, and it talked about narratives where the reader or / audience can affect the outcome. kind of like a choose your own adventure.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure. I gotcha. Mm-hmm.
But it talked a lot about video games and other kinds of interactive stuff. And I just loved it. And if you stretch that analogy to a classroom where the students are sort of the audience, they can change the outcome of the course in many ways. Hmm. And I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of agency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right, cool. So maybe I can take a shot at the bottom line here.
Sure, bottom line it for us.
So the more that we engage with technology-mediated learning and teaching, the more we need to cultivate humanizing elements in our courses and initiatives.
Yeah,
and storytelling is one way, if not arguably the best way, to humanize education.
I love that. That's great.
Cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, so... do you want to...
Can I make one plug before we wrap it up here? So if you're listening in real time, like when we just released this, we're just getting started, believe it or not, with season 4 of TopCast. And we'd love your input on what we should emphasize this season. We got our sense of what we're going to do. But would you please consider completing a maximum 2-minute poll? It's the URL is bit.ly/TopCast04, all lowercase, no spaces. bit.ly/TopCast04. It would be very helpful to us if you would do that. Give us a sense of what's important to you.
Thank you in advance.
Thank you in advance.
So for TopCast, until next time, I am Tom.
I'm Kelvin.
See ya.